person.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. Really, really good week of football, and I'm not just talking about my own game. We are at the point of the season where bye weeks are over. Every game matters. First place is changing back and forth. Seeding is changing constantly. All right. I'm going to apologize in advance because this is not my joke. This is Pod Vader's. The AFC West is the AFC mess. You know, it doesn't have to be a mess. Your face if you use Harry's razors. All right, again, that's Pod Vader. Send your hate mail to podcare of nextfanup at gmail.com. But for real, once again, our sponsor, Harry's, really, really appreciate them. I've been using them for a while now, and I absolutely adore them. I mean, their blades are smooth. They work awesome. They have a really, really nice shave gel. Christmas time is coming up, and they are an amazing stocking stuffer. I'll be honest, as just a full-grown guys, that's the sort of thing that I would love to get in my stocking someday. They've got some special holiday additions for them in a couple of colors. I've got the kind of chrome option with the engraving, so I really, really suggest you do that. Every set comes with custom-engineered five-blade cartridges that provide a close, comfortable shave. You get the foaming shave gel that smells amazing. And like I said, you get those special limited edition handles personalized with engraving. So no matter what you're looking for, Harry has you covered. The sets come ready to gift in beautifully designed boxes. Gifts start as cheap as $10. They're awesome stocking stuffers. And if you don't have somebody else you want to buy one for, give yourself the gift of Harry's. As a special offer for fans, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off your order when you go to harrys.com/nextfanup. This offer is only available during the holidays, so get it in before Christmas, guys. All right. So once again, go to harrys.com/nextfanup. This holiday, give Harry's and give handsome. Get your holiday shopping done early and take advantage of free shipping. To get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last, go to harrys.com/nextfanup right now. Got it? Good. All right. All right, let's get to the recap, starting with my favorite game of the week, my Seahawks in the Sunday night game.
Greetings and welcome to the game recap for our Sunday night contest between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Seattle Seahawks. With me, Justin, our Seattle Seahawks super fan, and James, our Philadelphia Eagles super fan. And fellas, excellent primetime battle here on Sunday night. Go ahead and take us through your news and notes. Justin, I'll swing it to you first since the Seahawks prevailed in this one. What did you think here in this game?
Well, obviously, I'm very happy with the game. I'm happy with the way it turned out. If you go back to the preview, James and I did, we laid out a couple of different scenarios. This is one that we laid out, but we called it fairly unlikely. I'm glad this is the way things went, though. You know, Seahawks win 24-10. So, you know, you beat the best team in the league this year by two touchdowns. That's something. To do it where you're missing two of your all-pro players on defense, that's fantastic. I mean, realistically, and this is to take nothing away from the Eagles offense, but you know, their lone touchdown came off of two you know, ridiculous, like 100 million shot plays. The team overall, top to bottom, was great. Nobody seemed to get hurt. Everybody was healthy. Russell Wilson, I think, just continues to climb up that MVP ladder. And I mean, it was a really, really solid win. You know, particular standouts, Jimmy Graham had a touchdown again. That's become automatic at this point. I think that makes nine in the last eight games, something like that. Like when the Seahawks got to the red zone in the first quarter, everybody who's a Seahawks fan knows, oh, he's about to throw it to Jimmy Graham and it's almost certainly going to be a touchdown, which it was, which was fantastic. They still can't run the ball. And that's fine. You get used to it. I mean, I think today Russell Wilson accounted for 78% of the total offense, which is lower than his average. But so, I mean, yeah, at least for me, like those are the two big stories and takeaways from this game. The Seahawks defense played fantastic against a offense that has been nigh unstoppable. And Russell Wilson is a one-man band and is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, definitely a battle between a couple of MVP candidates here. Of course, Carson Wentz being the other. And James, what can you take us through here? The one thing that I noticed in the game was that it seemed that Wentz was just missed Aguilar on a couple of early plays. I know they kind of they highlighted the one where he was extremely wide open at the beginning of the game, And I know you're familiar with Byron Maxwell as well. And he's kind of the result of some of the scoring that took place there in the second half, which Justin just named the 27-yard strike coming off that crazy 45-yard play where he was basically getting smashed and somehow pulled it off. It's just an awesome play. But again, the MVP caliber play continues for these two. What were your news and notes here on the game, James?
Missed opportunities for the most part. Just we had shots, like you mentioned, the Nelson Aguilar wide open play in the beginning. That was in the first quarter. He just completely overthrew him. He's wide open. I think the nearest defender is probably 20 yards away laterally, not even in the end zone. The other thing was they were way too conservative in the first half. And I got that, you know, they were trying to run a lot of the left and right stretch plays, catch the defense off guard, but this defense is too talented. You know, the Seahawks play very sound defense, especially with all the noise and stuff going on in their home stadium. And there weren't enough shots downfield to start the game off. I think, you know, aside from the Nelson Aguilar pass downfield, there may have been one other shot out of probably 15 pass plays that we had in the first half, and you only took two shots downfield for a secondary that's pretty much decimated with two of the best players out. Maxwell should have been torched early and often, not just in the second and third quarters for the most part, where they finally exposed him, you know, for the man-to-man coverage. And those things just came back to bite us in the end, along with the fumble in the beginning of the third quarter on our first possession by Carson Wentz out the back of the end zone, which luckily Seattle didn't bat out this time. The stretch play across the formation with the running back was lined up on the right, went left. The man who was covering him decided to blitz Wentz instead of follow him across the formation, and we missed that play on a fourth down that, you know, could have turned into a touchdown as well. So it was a lot of coulda, wouldas, but just missed opportunities was pretty much the biggest thing here.
So, yeah, let me
jump in real quick, because you and I talked about that a little bit on our Superfan battle for this game, right? That kind of sneakily, sort of under the radar, Carson Wentz has not been playing his best football lately. And so today, you know, he had those two fumbles, right? And, you know, you mentioned a couple of balls that he missed that probably would have been touchdowns. I mean, like that little throw to I don't know if it was running back, whatever, in the flat where KJ Wright decided, okay, I can't reach that guy, I'm just going to kill the quarterback. Like, right. There was nobody in front of him. Nobody. That's a touchdown. No. That's an Aguilar touchdown. So, you know, I think if you look at his highlight reel, right, you look at those crazy throws he made, he looked great. But, you know, you and I watch every play of this game. He missed throws. He fumbled the ball. A red zone fumble where you give up the ball to the other team is devastating. That interception at the game, I get it, right? You know, you're down by two scores with, like, 2 minutes to go. But even that, like, that was – if there's such thing as a high percentage or low percentage, like heave, that was a low percentage heave, right? That was I'm not even looking, I'm just going to close my eyes and chuck it. He did not play a fantastic game today, and Russell Wilson did. And I think that is the difference in the score is which of the players played their best football today.
Exactly. And like you said as well, you know, the most unlikely scenario we came up with was Russell Wilson literally puts this offense on his back, both passing and rushing, and he did. Pretty sure he was the team's leading rusher again tonight. And, you know, when things broke down, because we said it as well during our Superfan battle, it's not so much the plays that work well, it's the plays where everyone gets doing a jailbreak and he decides to run 20 yards back, you know, backwards and throws up something, and they get separation from the DBs, which happened on almost every play save two, where we finally got back there and, you know, got him for a couple of sacks. But Russell Wilson just put this team on his back, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing for you all in the long run, but it's good to watch as long as you're not the victim of it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't believe you can win a championship that way, mainly because nobody's ever done it, but at this point, you know, it's working, so we'll keep doing it. Also, shout out to Bobby Wagner. He honestly might have been the best player on the field, man. He was flying, blowing guys up in the backfield. He was so good today.
Yeah, he definitely didn't. There was a couple of double team blocks where the center and guard peel up to the tackle, and one of them is supposed to come off and take the middle linebacker, and they just never got there. You know, but by the time they turned around, he was already on their backside. And meeting the running back in the hole, and it just stymied our run game. It's probably the first time we didn't reach 100 yards since the loss to Kansas City as a team rushing. So, yeah, but definitely Bobby Wagner, if that guy doesn't win defensive MVP, I don't understand how this award is, determined.
Agreed.
Yeah, good call. I think you guys brought up some fantastic points. James, one thing you mentioned, you kind of thought it was a game of missed opportunities. One thing, and Justin, you might be able to provide your thoughts on this as well, but you mentioned the word laterally, which kind of made me think of a missed opportunity there with the challenge that, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Eagles still had a challenge at that point, but the lateral there, where he flipped the ball to Mike Davis, and he ended up picking up about 15, 16 extra yards, which on a third down play would have been a 5-yard penalty after the review. I thought right there, that was where the game was put out of reach, because they went on to score on that McKissick touchdown. That made it a 2-touchdown game. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Definitely a missed opportunity. I didn't think it was – I thought it was a decent lateral in real time until they slowed it down really, really slow, and they showed where Wilson was when he pitched it and where Davis was when he caught it. And it looked like the pitch was backwards, but somehow it went forward. So we did still have a challenge left at that point, and probably head coaches thinking it's too close to call. The first challenge we called earlier in the half was also too close to call, and we lost it. So they figured if it was too close to call, don't even try to lose another timeout. So it was probably just more just being cautious than anything else.
Yeah, and I think that play happening in real time, with both players running forward with how fast they both are, Wilson especially, I mean, the dude can scoot, and, he throws that, and it kind of gives that illusion like the ball was thrown backwards, and when in all reality we saw that it actually was, not a legal forward or not a legal lateral. So, but there you have it. Essentially, that was the result. The McKissick touchdown puts the game out of reach. And your final score, 24-10. Again, the Seahawks take this one down, and the Eagles get just their second loss on the season. But it definitely tightens things up in the NFC, gentlemen. It's going to be an interesting last few weeks here to the season.
Indeed, it will.
Race to the finish.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for stopping out, fellas. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, here we have MJ, the Falcons super fan, with the Vikings super fan, myself, Joe. We're going to be recapping the Vikings-Falcons game. Hey, what's going on, MJ?
Not too much. Just kind of licking my wounds and trying to enjoy the rest of some football today.
I hear you, brother. Tell me, what did you like and what did you dislike from today's game?
What I liked from today's game, we didn't get blown out. There were a few times some busted coverage and the defense kind of fell through. But I like the fact that even with the defense not playing up to par, we were still able to keep the game close. A 14-9 loss, I mean, don't get me wrong, I want the W, but to lose 14-9, that's not horrible. It's not horrible.
No, I agree with you on that part. Yeah, for sure. Falcons definitely played really well on defense. Tell me what you didn't like.
What I didn't like was the fact that we played poorly in the red zone. Had we done better in the red zone and scored touchdowns instead of field goals, this would have been a game I think we could have won, but at the end of the day, we didn't execute in the red zone well, and that's why we lost.
Yeah, I thought that that's kind of where you would go with that. The Vikings pretty much game plan all day. One, shut down Julio Jones, and two, make sure that we just limited him once they got to the red zone, because there was no way that we were going to keep that Falcons offense out of the red zone. They're just an explosive offense, and early in the game it looked like the announcers on TV were saying it too. They were just attacking the Vikings vanilla defense on first and second down, and then trying to stay away from third down situations. And then as soon as they got into the red zone, it seemed to stall out. Talk to me about how you felt the running game for the Falcons went. They rushed for over 100 yards against a Vikings defense that doesn't typically give up 100 yards rushing to many defenses. I thought that that's where they kind of got away from their game plan a little bit was, you know, they would start to run the ball and then they would back off a little bit.
The running game actually looked pretty good today. It looked pretty good. Seeing Devontae Freeman back out there, I want to say he averaged either right at 6 or just under 6 yards a carry. He looked pretty good. He definitely put the running game on his back. One of the issues I have with our offense, though, is you need the run game to keep your defense honest so that you can get into the passing game. But I think the Falcons are a pass-heavy team and don't truly commit to the run like we need to. However, against the Vikings defense, committing to the run like we needed to, I don't think was really going to be an option because that front line of yours is pretty damn stout. I give them a lot of credit for that. And they're fast. A lot of our run plays ended up with just not going anywhere unless we were able to find a crease for Devontae to squeeze through. The run defense from the Vikings is just pretty damn impressive.
I agree with you on that point. I think one thing that kind of didn't help the Falcons early in the game, getting behind the chains with penalties. They still came away with 3 points on the first drive, but I thought that, you know, the penalties that the Falcons were taking were just killers in some instances, and ended up putting them in a lot of third and long situations. And again, to reference the announcers, what they were saying in the game, you know, they talked about it. You know, Vikings are the best third down defense in the NFL when it's 3rd and 7 or longer. And, you know, it's third and 7 and shorter, or 3rd and 6 and shorter. It, you know, the Falcons are one of the best offenses on in the NFL as far as third down goes. And so I definitely agree with you there. I think that what ended up turning the game a little bit was that eight minute and 15 second drive to end the third quarter to begin the fourth quarter where they punched it in for a touchdown. I think at that point, Atlanta was gassed.
Yeah, because the defense hadn't been out, or our defense hadn't been on the field for that long a stretch of time, and you could see them starting to run out of gas. I mean, it was just clear they were running out of gas because that offense was on the field longer than we were expecting to.
The game pretty much went, you know, for the first two and a half quarters went the way that I thought it was going to be. It was going to be a close, tight game. You know, I thought that that both teams would be able to move the ball between the 20s and then lock down between the 20s, which is basically what happened. For the most part, I think that, you know, I think that for the Falcons, missing Trufant and Brian Poole definitely played a difference, even though they made the Vikings do something that they don't want to do, and that was throw outside the numbers. I still think that Falcons defense is just unbelievably good, and I think that teams are going to sleep on that later in the season. They're going to get caught, too, because the Vikings offense was playing really well, and to keep them to 14 points, very impressed with what the Falcons did.
Yeah, even without Trufant, the defense, the secondary stepped up. And that's the thing I think a lot of people don't give the Falcons credit for is there's depth at the position, because you ask your average person who else is out there besides Trufant and they won't know. But when you start looking at that roster, there is depth at most of our positions. And I think that's an advantage that we have, because when our starters aren't healthy and can't play, we've got people that can step up and make plays. And no, they're not as good as the starters, but they're serviceable and they do a damn good job.
Absolutely. So tell me who you guys got coming up next.
Our last bit of the season, that's nothing but division games. We've got the Saints coming up next, which that's going to be an interesting game. And then we got the Bucks again, and then the Saints again, and then the Panthers again. So, yeah, our next 4 games, nothing but division.
Absolutely. And I believe that that's a Thursday night game. So,
Yeah, the Saints is a Thursday night game, which is actually this coming Thursday. So it's going to be a short week.
Yeah, absolutely.
And luckily luckily for us, this short week is a home game. So that'll at least give us a slight advantage, just in the sense that we don't have to travel. We can actually get a little bit more rest and preparation for the game.
Absolutely. And it looked like, for the most part, you guys came out of the game healthy. You know, the defense was a little bit gassed as far as that goes. But you came out of the game healthy. It's a short week, but you get to stay at home. And the other bonus is, if you guys can take care of business at home and beat the Saints, then the Vikings are also playing the Panthers. So if we can take care of business, that's a double win for you guys. Good luck the rest of the way, MJ.
Thanks, man. You too.
All right.
Hello, once again, it is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan, hosting some more game recaps here. And with me is Ben, our Cleveland Browns super fan. And Ben, didn't get the win today. 10-19, the Browns fall to the Chargers in what I guess you could call a home game for the now Los Angeles Chargers at StubHub. But let's just get right to it, man. This was the return of one Mr. Josh Gordon, and it was officially Josh Gordon week. Looked like he got off to a pretty solid start. Had one catch I can speak of that I remember specifically, where he towered over who is, I believe, PFF's number one ranked corner right now, Casey Hayward, and just brought the ball down on the left sideline. To go ahead and take us through the news and notes here and the return of Josh Gordon.
Yeah, so I just want to say, like, at the very beginning of today's game, Hugh's first play call today was a 9-yard slant route to Josh Gordon, which is pretty exciting to see. And then it's just really exciting to see, like, a receiver who, one, has the physical abilities, and then it can also just catch the ball. I mean, I don't know if you've had the pleasure of watching Ricardo Lewis drop 22% of the passes thrown his way, but it's nice to kind of push him down the depth chart. And Kenny Britt, I mean, I think I saw his shadow once the entire game. It was just awesome. You know, when you start to get players like Josh Gordon and Corey Coleman back on the field, you know, bums like Kenny Britt just don't really see the field. And that usually is a good thing. So just going back to Josh Gordon, I mean, this is a guy who hasn't played football in 3 years. And to your point, he came out and just, I mean, he had his way with Casey Hayward. There's nothing he could do. I mean, it was great. I mean, I think Kizer threw the ball toward – I mean, I think Josh Gordon ended the game on 11 targets, only able to bring down 4 of them. I mean, but if we had a even halfway decent quarterback, I mean, I think Josh Gordon would have probably had probably, I don't know, 140 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, there were 2 bombs that he just demoralized the San Diego secondary on, and Kizer just overthrew him. Like, there twice, I'm just sitting there screaming, jumping up and down, like, what are you doing? Like, and I think, that just really points. It's so impressive when you see a player like that who hasn't played a game in 3 years. And then, you know, I think we all know his backstory and stuff like that. So it's really hard to root against a kid, that's for sure. He looks great. And he actually, he really opened up the middle of the field. I don't know if you have David Njoku's stats up there. It was his best day as a pro by far. And I think that's a direct correlation to having Josh Gordon out there, which is just great.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you saw Njoku catch 4 balls for 71, and he got in the box. Excellent catch, too, by the way, on the touchdown, 28-yarder. I was just going to say the same thing. That throw and several others during the game really, you know, of course, you know, Brown's still searching for the first win. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's nice to have kind of your first pick of next year's top talent or whatever. But nice to know that Kizer's not scared to sling it around out there at all. You know, and when you're kind of digging into, you know, some of the nuts and bolts of the performance here, you know, you mentioned they opened the game with that slant to Gordon. He was really good. Kizer was really good with the short intermediate stuff. It was when he struggled, aside from the one pass down the left sideline that we mentioned, and also aside from the Njoku score, which I believe was also down the left side of the field, just no success for Kizer throwing the ball. And, you know, I thought that Crowell would have a little bit better game in this one. I was fortunate enough to watch what a lot of people might have thought at the beginning of the week as not going to be a good game. A lot of people, I know San Diego was about a 2-touchdown favorite on this one for today.
Yeah.
You know, and they did win by 9, but ultimately this game was a lot closer than people are really going to think when they just kind of look at the box score there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, I mean, a lot of that really comes down to, I don't know, if you guys have been listening to me all season, you know the first tenets of being a Browns is thou shalt give up points before half, which of course we did. And Njoku scored on that touchdown there and gave Phillip Rivers just enough time to march down the field and kick a field goal.
And of course it was no Coons, right?
Yeah, and it was like a 5-yard. It was like a they were on the 5-yard line. The only thing that kept them from scoring was the time. And then on top of that, you got Kaiser, who I think he had some flash plays, but I mean, all in all, I would say this is a very poor performance from the eye test here. He was just erratic with the football, really inaccurate. You know, I mean, overall, I don't know. I don't have the stats in front of me. Hopefully you do, but I don't think he even completed 50% of his passes. Like it was a pretty poor performance for him.
Yeah. He needed one more. He needed one more to get there. He was 15 of 32 and he almost got to 50%, but not quite.
And that's just not going to get it done. And when you have David Njoku, Seth DeValve, Josh Gordon and Corey Coleman, you need to play better than that. I mean, I think it's the sad state of affairs when we don't have anything better behind him. And then the last thing I want to say about Kaiser is just, you know, we still had a chance. It was in the fourth quarter there, we're marching, we're in the red zone, and it's third down, we're looking to score, and Kaiser starts, I don't even know what you would call it, chassé-ing to like to the left side of the hash mark, just holding on to the ball, patting it, and Joey Bosa just comes up from behind him, you know, 12 seconds after the snap and sacks him, and he was completely oblivious to that, and it was completely taken by surprise. Ended up turning the ball over, and then that was the end of the game. I mean, if you've been listening to me from the very beginning of the season, you know the thing that I gripe the most with Kaiser is his slow processing speed and just holding onto that ball for way too long. And this is definitely one of those. I mean, somebody had to have been on the field like, hey Kaiser, look out, you know, get rid of the ball, like do something. I feel pretty confident saying that he is definitely, I'm not pounding my fist that he's the quarterback to build around going forward. You know, whether or not I think Hugh Jackson is, whether or not we get an offensive coordinator in there that knows what they're doing, because Hugh Jackson does not.
Right. Yeah. It's, to think that, you know, the O-line, I mean, there's pieces in place. I mean, a lot of people like to talk smack about the Browns and, you know, and I'm not going to ramble on here, but I know we got to get going in a minute here, but just 3 sacks by the defense. I mean, this is a defense that is as hot as any in the league. Jacksonville and the Chargers, Joey Bosa, of course, that sack fumble didn't help as far as momentum is concerned. I can't remember if that was second or third quarter, but I mean, aside from the Keenan Allen touchdown, you know, the Chargers weren't generating much offense and the Browns had a lot of shots. And when you look at some of the personnel that San Diego has, as far as, you know, we mentioned Casey Hayward being ranked so far the best quarterback going into going into week 13. And, you know, Bosa actually led the team in tackles today. You know, Desmond King had a sack. And the one thing that I think I know I saw Kaiser overthrow Coleman, but I think that's the one thing about Gordon coming back and just the lack of efficiency that Kaiser offers to the offense is there maybe not be enough targets to go around with all those guys. I mean, Coleman didn't even get on the stat sheet today, although, you know, it wasn't really any fault of his own. But a lot of people like to talk smack about the Browns. I personally think there are a ton of good pieces in place for this team going forward and a solid nucleus to build around. So, yeah. Well, Ben, again, I appreciate you stopping by to go over the game and give us your news and notes here. Again, the Chargers, 19-10 victors over the Browns. And we appreciate you stopping by, Ben. We will catch you next week, sir.
Sounds great.
Have a good one, buddy.
And next up is the Kansas City Chiefs and their loss to the New York Jets back at MetLife Stadium, back in front of their Kansas City Chiefs superfan, which is me, Nick. And, yeah. sure glad that I decided that this is going to be a great year living in New York. Chiefs coming to town twice. It's going to be fun. I'm going to get tickets to both games. It's not like both games are going to be, you know, key in the Chiefs' collapse. as you might have heard in my battle, or at least preview with James, our Texas superfan, on a Thursday show leading into this game, I spent a lot of the time really complaining about Alex Smith, and Alex Smith clearly was not the problem in this game. He threw for 366 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Seemed to get back on track. You know, all of the things that I had been complaining the Chiefs had not been doing on offense, the Chiefs offense started doing. They started targeting Tyreek Hill deep. He had 2 touchdowns and 185 yards. They started really targeting Travis Kelce more. He himself had 2 touchdowns and actually the first 2 touchdowns of the game. The Chiefs were really rolling at times. But then once again, it was the defense then. It was their turn to start screwing things up. Darrell Revis, who they started, he did not look ready to be a starting NFL cornerback. And I don't know whether it was his own team feeling juiced up to go after him or what, but I don't know. The lights seemed too bright for him. It did not look good. But, you know, this game really, it was a close game. It came down to, it was a shootout towards the end. It was, you know, a 38-30 game. 31 game. And so, you know, what it really came down to was the last few stops. And once again, the Chiefs just couldn't stop them. And so, I mean, in a way though, as much time as I spent talking about the quarterbacks during the preview of this game, it still, for the Chiefs, is, you know, really the major subtext here, because at what point do the Chiefs just begin the future? This team is 6-6 now. Still technically, you know, at the top spot in the division, but, you know, and we are still playing 3 more division games to finish out this season. But, you know, I mean, does anyone really think this is a Super Bowl contender at this point? This team that has gone 1-6 in their last 7 games? And so, you know, at what point does it make sense just to give Pat Mahomes a little bit of actual game time? But, you know, back to the game, I mean, the Jets have really found some things with Robbie Anderson, with their mix of Matt Forte and Bilal Powell. They have enough of a running game. They're a balanced team, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, clearly Todd Bowles has played for his job and has, you know, in my opinion, with not a great amount of talent, has definitely played himself in a position to keep his job. We'll see what the Jets, you know, want to do, because they're also playing so well. They've probably gotten themselves out of the Darnold sweepstakes for a quarterback next year. They have themselves McCown, who's not a long-term solution at quarterback. So it'll be an interesting team to watch as a team that could fight their way up to somewhere around 500 and be the sort of team that, you know, you add an above-average quarterback like Alex Smith to, you know, they could be, you know, a team that can make some noise, especially with the Tom Brady's of the world and the Roethlisberger's of the world beginning their exit. But yeah, I mean, I'm the Chiefs fan. I gotta whine about Chiefs things. Like, I was at this game, and I was really preparing myself for the worst. And it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but at 6-6, you know, it's just been a sort of roller coaster that I almost, you know, look, I mean, if you had asked a Chiefs fan going into the season, what do you expect of the Chiefs? Like, well, I expect the Chiefs to go somewhere around 11-5 and maybe win one playoff game and then, but not go any further than that. I mean, like, one playoff win is the Chiefs ceiling with Alex Smith. I'm not sure the Chiefs get even that far, but even if they do, given how excited everybody was about the Chiefs to start this season, with their big wins over the Patriots and the Eagles, and going on at 5-0 start, there's no way this season ends up being anything but a disappointment. And that's where why I think so many Chiefs fans are clamoring for Pat Mahomes. It's not even so much just because, you know, we think he's going to be the better guy to win the games or anything like that. It's just like, we've seen this story before. We know what's going to happen. Like, it's like watching the same movie again. And we're ready to fast forward to the sequel, which is the Pat Mahomes Kansas City Chiefs. But again, like, you know, it was not Alex Smith that lost this game. He got himself back on track. He was doing the right things. The one thing on the offensive side, apparently called by Nagy, our offensive coordinator, not Andy Reid, according to reports, they still are not running the ball enough. And granted, this is something I'm going to harp on every single time I'm on the pod. There's 9 carries by Kareem Hunt, still going 4.4 yards per carry, still not enough. And I know their zone blocking schemes aren't working, but fine, do something simple. Still, like, you have to hand off the ball enough. You have to have a balanced offense. You have to grind out some drives. There were plenty of third and shorts where they decided to throw on it. And it's like, dude, Kareem Hunt has this. Why are you throwing deep? And I love to see the deep throws in general, but on drives that you really need to keep going, that is not the time for it, dudes. And on the defense, it's just becoming more and more clear that I think next year's draft and free agency is going to be about rebuilding this thing. I think it may not be surprises for Chiefs fans, but there's going to be some offseason storylines. There are going to be some big names cut from this defense that have been a big part of what has made the Chiefs the scary big one of the scary big defenses in this league. And they're going to get cut this year for cap space as the Chiefs rebuild this thing and start from scratch on defense. I know Monty, our Oakland Raiders super fan, has been talking about the window closing. I don't think the window is closing. The window may be closing for Alex Smith, but there's definitely a transition taking place in Kansas City. Whether we make it to the playoffs this year or not, there's going to be some major turnover on defense. And it's going to be a very different looking offense as well going into next year. I'm excited for that. And that's what kind of puts me in a weird position as a fan, that I'm excited for 2018 and I have to keep watching 2017. But for now, this is still my team. Go Chiefs.
Hello, it is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan. And with me to recap the Indianapolis Colts at the Jacksonville Jaguars is none other than Ryan, our Jacksonville Jaguars super fan. Ryan, we're looking at a 20-point win today, sir. 30-10, the final here. Why don't you take us through the news and notes and how the Jags were able to stifle the Colts today?
Oh, gladly. I mean, it's such a disappointment that the Colts scored 10 points today. We held them to 0 last time. But that's getting greedy, but it's okay.
Yeah, aren't these... I was just going to say, aren't these divisional matchups supposed to be lower scoring the second time around?
Yeah, I was on high alert about that, you know, kind of wondering how it would go. And unfortunately, I was actually in Glendale last week to watch the Jaguars live and lost on a last second field goal. So that really stung. And now next week we get a 20-point win. So I'm back to a happy Jaguars fan that I've been for 8 times this year. And the news and notes I would say is, let's give, I don't know how many times I say this, let's give a lot of credit to Blake Bortles and the wide receivers. Man, they played a great game today. Obviously the defense, but let's give some credit to Blake when he has a great day. He went over 300 yards. And I think there was only one drop today by the whole receiving core, which is incredible for how a lot of these games have been going. Really, really nice to see.
Yeah, 26 of 35 for Bortles, couple touchdowns and no interceptions. Of course, he wasn't crazy man Blake Bortles out there scrambling into the end zone like we saw last week, but that's usually a good thing. So, you know, we'll kind of take that for what it is. But yeah, I thought the offense did appear to be pretty much firing on all cylinders. And I got to admit, Ryan, I was a little bit of a D.D. Westbrook skeptic. And a lot of people are high on him because of him having a good preseason. But those of us who watched Hard Knocks know that he was picking on an injured fourth string corner when they played Tampa, which is most of when that production came. But he looked really good, man. 6 for 78. Of course, Marquise Lee, 7 for 86 and a touch as well. And Keelan Cole had an awesome catch as well in the end zone, which I caught. But awesome all-around effort for sure. And like you mentioned, this is the eighth time that you've been, singing a happy tune after the game here. What do you think as far as the rest of the division playing out here? I mean, I personally think it's the Jags division here going forward. I really don't see any way that they can screw this up. What say you?
I wish I could take that mentality. I agree with you as far as all logical football reasons, but myself and any other Jaguars fans know that the Jaguars have never won the AFC South ever. So they've won the AFC Central, but not the AFC South. So I want it so bad. And of course, the year where it looks like we might do it, the other team has to be the friggin' Titans, who I can't stand. And the Texans couldn't get it done against them today. It looks like it's headed for a collision course in week 17 for sure.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. I mean, I think the Titans' ineptitude on offense is one thing that's holding them back. And I firmly believe the Jaguars can take advantage. I mean, we saw Derrick Henry just rip off another monster run today, but yet they seem to keep his production subdued for whatever reason. So I'm not really sure what that's all about, to be quite honest, but
me either.
Hey, take advantage.
That's right. Let's get that Titan stock out of here. Let's get some credit to Ramsey making an interception. Paul Posluszny with 1.5 sacks. What's happening? I love it. Telvin Smith was out with a concussion, and Paul Posluszny had to play a lot more snaps, which he's been used to his whole career, just not this year. He was awesome. Malik Jackson got a sack. Brissett has had some nice moments this year, and they really just smothered him again. I feel like he had under 100 yards passing for most of the game. And sure, it's the Colts, sure, it's Brissett, but still, this defense is still, got to just keep saying it, the best in the league, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, absolutely. They proved that once again today. And Ryan, I appreciate you stopping by to kind of go over the news and notes here. Again, the Jaguars victors over the Colts at home 30-10. Ryan, thanks again.
Hey, thank you. Going to enjoy another victory week. Go Jags.
Take care, buddy.
All right, you too.
Hello once again, everyone. It is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions superfan. And we are going to be, because Andy, our Miami Dolphins super fan, is with me today to recap their victory over the Denver Broncos, who came to Miami. And Andy, just talking before we hopped on the pod here, didn't know that this game was such a runaway as it was. 35-9, the final score here. The Dolphins really taking care of business. I knew that the Broncos offense was bad. But wow, I didn't realize it was this bad. Take us through this game, man. How did this thing get from 16-3 at the half to 35-9?
It was a strange game, that's for sure. I'd say the Broncos are pretty bad. I thought the Broncos had a decent chance in this game. I picked the Dolphins to win, but I didn't think it would look like this. It's weird how the Pro Bowl has become such a joke. So. Simeon, believe it or not, actually was a Pro Bowler last year. And the thing with the Pro Bowl is so many players are dropping out. So they have to bring backup and reserve after reserve. And he was awful. He had no protection. It was the type of game where if you thought back in August an optimistic viewpoint of what the Dolphins offensive line could be, or defensive line rather, could be, it looked like this game. Jordan Phillips was ridiculous. Sue's been great no matter what. Wake got cheated out of a safety. We had two safeties this game. That's how inept the Broncos were. Now, one of them was on a kick return, but, Culler wasn't good. Culler turned the ball over twice. He threw a pick six. It was crazy how, Culler was pretty bad, but he made enough plays where we outgained him ultimately by probably like 60 yards. I think I'm looking at it here. We outgained him by about 65 yards. Really crazy game. I think that going forward, I mean, the Pass game, Monday Night Football at home. Place will be loud. That could be closer than people think. Line's still going to be 10. Were you able to see any of this game?
Yeah, you know, I did see the pick six that you just mentioned, Matt, in the first half when it was a much closer game. And of course, those who don't know, that was the reason that Simmons is the reason that T.J. Ward was let go from the Broncos. They really thought that they had a player in him. As far as I've seen, he's been pretty good. One of the high points in that defense. I know the Broncos were down a couple key run defenders in this game. And I thought that, you know, because of that, I thought that the Dolphins would win that and the fact that they were at home. But yeah, I didn't realize that there was two safeties in this game. It looks like that's pretty much how the scoring ended, was with the McKenzie getting tackled in the end zone by Snorris Perry. So yeah, aside from the first half highlights that I saw, I didn't get to check out a whole lot from the second half, but yeah, just an absolute smash. It looks like Kenny Stills had a pretty good game, and it looked like Kenyon Drake definitely took over the lead back role and flourished aside from a fumble there.
Yeah, Kenyon Drake could be the real deal going forward. As I said earlier, before we started recording, he does fumble quite a bit. But from a talent perspective, he's very talented with the ball in his hands. And, you know, that's always a good start. You mentioned Snorris Perry, who, because we're so thin in running back right now, was the backup behind Kenyon Drake. He had a really nasty concussion against the Patriots last week, was able to recover it in the end zone or force the second safety. So it was good to see him back healthy. Xavien Howard actually had two interceptions. One of them was a pick six. Xavien Howard's been terrible all year, so that was interesting. He also actually, Simeon also really poorly underthrew Emmanuel Sanders at the goal line, which should have been a very easy slant touchdown. And Xavien Howard broke it up, which was, you know, kind of lucky. The Broncos shot themselves in the foot. I mean, that's what bad teams do. One thing that I found super interesting is Gase went for and recovered an onside kick up by 20 in the second half. And Vance Joseph, the head coach of the Broncos, was, of course, our defensive coordinator last year. And Gase, of course, used to be employed by the Broncos. So there's a lot of, like, I don't know if it's bad blood, but there's a lot of familiarity in many regards. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The two men shook hands at the end, so it didn't really matter, but it was a very quick handshake, and I don't know. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of familiarity, former Broncos tight end Julius Thomas caught a touchdown pass in the red zone as well for you guys. The one thing I noticed between, you know, when I look at this game, the one thing I noticed is that Simeon just really did not have any success going to the right side of the field. Most of his passes were completed either right over the middle under 10 yards, or he completed some, you know, going to the left side of the field. Other than that, I mean, he was completely shut down. Three INTs today and no touchdowns to speak of. 41 pass attempts to get to the 200 yards. Definitely thought that the you know, the Dolphins pass defense. I did see the one, was it Howard that pick sixed one of those two, you said?
Yep. That was the pick six.
Yeah. And that was the one I saw. I mean, it doesn't seem to matter who the Broncos put in at quarterback at this point. There just seems to be a general ineptitude on that offense. You know, people might hate on the Dolphins offense, but when you look at the personnel that the Dolphins have compared to the personnel that the Broncos have, that's one of the reasons that I like the Dolphins coming into this game. Not to mention that, you know, when you're looking at the strategy the Broncos employ, which is give one running back a few carries, and then maybe next week give him 20, and then maybe next week give him one. I just don't understand why they don't let any of their running backs get into a rhythm. And therefore not really surprised to see the offense not establish any sort of rhythm in this game and see the Dolphins kind of run away with it. So, good win for you guys, Andy, going forward. What are kind of some quick thoughts on the rest of the season here beyond week 13?
We could definitely win a lot of games and not pick very high in the draft and finish 7-9. I mean, if you think about it right now, we have 7 losses right now. You know, we could probably finish 2-2. So we're 5-7. I could see us beating or splitting with the Bills. I could see us, I mean, we're not going to win in Arrowhead, but the Chiefs didn't look good today. Their defense looked very bad against the Jets. Obviously, the Jets aren't the pushover, as we all know. We're going to lose next week against New England. Did you see Tyrod get carted off the field, by the way?
Yeah, it looked like he got hurt before he was carted off, and then he kind of, you know, was trying to tough it out, and I think he got hit, you know, on the play right after that, and eventually he ended up leaving, but yeah, I mean, turning that team over to Nathan Peterman's probably going to be
if Tyrod's done, we could potentially sweep the Bills. I'm not going to say probably sweep the Bills, because we're very, very bad. Don't let this win fool you. We're very bad still. But we could potentially sweep the Bills, and that would be 7 wins right there. We're not going to beat the Patriots, but what if we go into Arrowhead and win? The Chiefs are very mediocre. Although, I still think the Chiefs are going to beat us because they are better. They're just more talented. Their offense, I think, still is genuinely talented. Smith, I don't know if you saw Alex Smith. He had a very, very good game today, all things considered.
Oh, yeah, monster game.
He didn't look good on the final play. He threw the ball into no man's land when he was targeting Kelsey. But Alex Smith had a very good game. They're going to beat us. But if we sweep the Bills, we can go 7-9. And that sucks. You know,
yeah,
we'll
probably
go quarterback next year, but we're not going to.
Yeah, I was trying to see if I could fish a playoff prediction out of you. I was on the ESPN the playoff predictor. It's like a scenario generator. You may have seen this. I'm not going to go through it because. Yeah, because our listeners probably don't want to go through the page-long scenario that it takes for the Dolphins. But last week I was messing around with this, and the Dolphins could have theoretically still got a 2 seed, believe it or not. So, you know, a lot of stuff would have had to happen, obviously. But nonetheless, Andy, I do appreciate you stopping by. Fantastic game for the Dolphins, and we will see you next week, sir.
All right, later, bro.
Have a good one, Andy. Hello, once again, it is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan, and with me to host the San Francisco 49ers at the Chicago Bears game recap is Charlie, our San Francisco 49ers super fan. And Charlie kind of had a low-scoring bout here today at Soldier Field, but kind of expected that today, and a little bit of a field goal festival here, my friend. Why don't you take us through the news and notes and what you thought of the game today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Niners, you know, really were. It was such a huge game for us because you know, the first start for Jimmy Garoppolo, and just knowing whether the franchise is going to be in good hands going forward, and based off of, you know, one game versus a. Very stout Bears defense, I would say it is. Jimmy Garoppolo came out and was completing passes, had the offense ahead of schedule, and even at times when they were behind on the sticks, you know, third and long, third and medium, the Niners were still staying on the field and converting, which was just not like them. They have, I want to say they're, you know, 30th in 3-and-outs as a league rating so far this year, and they were 4-for-7 on 3-and-outs of 3rd and long. So overall, they just seemed to, you know, stay on the field and just barely did enough to win there. But definitely, I would say in the small sample size, with the balls that Garoppolo was completing and on time, I would say they have themselves a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, 26 for 37 today. He just fell 7 yards short of eclipsing the 300 mark. So I absolutely thought that was an excellent effort on his end. On the other side, the Bears do what they do. They only let Trubisky cut it loose 15 times. He barely got over 100 yards. Honestly, I thought that the key to this game was the run defense for San Francisco showed up today. You know, everybody kind of talked about all week how they were just going to get ran all over by Jordan Howard. 38 yards by Howard, and the Bears defense, or I should say the Bears offense rather, really struggled after the first quarter. Trubisky hit Dontrell Inman for that touchdown. And then other than that, I mean, Tariq Cohen returned the punt. You know, no offense to speak of. So I really thought the defense showed out today as well. So kind of kind of good news on both sides of the ball. What did you think about the defense today, Charlie?
Yeah. Going into the defense, honestly, the Niners, typically their defense is kind of good in spite of the offense. That was completely the other way around. The Niners defense was good because of the offense keeping the ball. You know, they were right around 39 minutes of time of possession. So it was really all about, you know, the Niners keeping the Bears offense on the sideline. Contrary to popular belief, the Niners actually have more time as a defense on the field this year than they did last year with Mr. Chip Kelly on the helm. So, you know, it's very, very interesting that the Niners really were, you know, continuing to be the same kind of thing with their defense. Well, now all of a sudden you put a really good serviceable starting quarterback and maybe even a franchise guy in Jimmy G, and we're converting first downs and we're staying on the field. And all of a sudden our defense looks really, really good.
Yeah, who would have figured offensive efficiency combined with defensive efficiency is a recipe for a win. But like you said, one start for Jimmy G and one victory for you guys, Charlie. So excellent. Personally, always like to see when the Bears lose. No disrespect to Tom, our Chicago Bears super fan, but you know, Lions had a rough day, so it was kind of nice to see the Bears have a rough day, especially with Robbie Gould revenge game. With the game, those who didn't see, the game ends with a last second field goal. Robbie Gould converts. Was he 5 for 5? Am I right, Charlie?
That would be right. So yeah, Robbie was able to, you know, really beat all of the scoring offense for the 49ers against his ex-team. And right as he made that last-second field goal to win it for the Niners, it was a short one, but his celebration consisted of, you know, looking directly at the Bears sideline and just jumping up and down after they cut him last year and let him go to the 49ers, and he has just been an electric kicker for us. One of the bright spots within a season of misery.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Gould absolutely smashing for you guys this year. While meanwhile, the Bears trotted out Cairo Santos, their third kicker this year. So definitely, if I had to guess between who would be employed next year between John Fox and Robbie Gould, I'm going to go ahead and put my gambling chips on one Mr. Robbie Gould, sir. So I would definitely expect that to be the case. And John Fock looking for work next year. Would you guys take him on your coaching staff?
Fox? No. No, but I think Chicago will be looking for a former 49ers head coach. You know, Jim Harbaugh's hit his fourth year there at Michigan, and anyone who's followed Jim Harbaugh's career, every 4 years he makes a change. And whether it's his doing or someone else's doing, 4 years he makes a change. So could he go back to being captain comeback there for the Chicago Bears, where he played for a few years as the quarterback? I think he could be. If he sold on Mitchell Trubisky, he could go there and have an Alex Smith pep a year and reunite with Vic Fangio. I kind of hope he does, because Harbaugh's never really won the big one. He's always gotten to the dance, but he's never won the big one. So I would like, you know, him to go there and show that it's not the 49ers who ousted him. It's not he that ousted the 49ers. It's the 49ers that ousted him, and for a good reason.
Right. Yeah. The whether that's people just getting sick of him or whatnot, I know there's a lot of fans over by where I live that would be heartbroken if Mr. Harbaugh were to leave his current position. But that's going to lead us down a whole different road, my friend. And Charlie, well, we should probably stop now. And I just wanted to say thanks for stopping out to recap the game. Once again, the Niners winning 15-14 on the last second Robbie Gould hashtag revenge game narrative field goal. And always good to see. And thanks again, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Have a good one, bud. Hello again. It is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan, and with me to host the Green Bay Packers victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is Brian, our Green Bay Packers super fan. Brian, greetings, and thanks for stopping in here to recap this one. I believe this was our only overtime game that we had today in Week 13. What are the news and notes here?
Yeah, it was kind of a difficult game to watch from a Packers fan's perspective. The offense outside of Jamal Williams really looked bad. Brett Hundley, I think, threw for a total of 84 yards, which is never a good thing. But it was enough to win, and the good news for the Packers was all the things that never show up for us showed up today. We had a pretty strong rushing attack. Jamal Williams looks like a pretty good player, good runner, kind of vision to see the cutback, power to push some piles, and he was pretty much the extent of our entire offense. So we had a rough game. The defense showed up today. I think we had 7 sacks and a touchdown. And special teams even played pretty well today. We had a blocked punt and a couple of really good returns from Trevor Davis. So definitely not what you're used to watching as a Packer fan. Usually we're kind of throwing the ball all over the yard, but I don't mind winning ugly if it keeps the playoff hopes alive.
Yeah, no kidding. And I never would have thought with Rodgers going out and the Lions having Stafford for the most part healthy, that these two teams would be in the position they are now. But yeah, I absolutely agree about the defense showing up. Clay Matthews, 2.5 sacks today to go along with 6 tackles. And one thing I noticed when watching some of this game, Brian, was it seemed like every time Brett Hundley took off out of the pocket, he was converting a key third down. I swear every time I flipped to this game or saw this game on the red zone, it was third down and Green Bay was converting. I don't know if that was just happenstance or what, but it seemed like they were definitely doing a great job of converting on third down. You know, even though there was only just 84 yards through the air, you mentioned that Jamal Williams had a fantastic game. Really surprised to see that Aaron Jones only got the 1 carry there for the 20-yard touchdown. What exactly happened with the running back workload in this game?
Yeah, I don't know if we were expecting to really play Aaron Jones. He's coming off of a couple of week injury. I think he had a MCL injury. And I think what happened was we ran Jamal Williams and ran him and ran him and ran him until he needed somebody to step in there and give him a breather. And we picked a pretty good time to let Aaron Jones come in. He got bottled up, trying to push the middle of the middle of the pile, kind of behind the center and the guard. Didn't go anywhere, but nobody really wrapped him up, so he kind of broke it outside and supermanned into the end zone for the big win. So it was an exciting run, and I'm expecting we'll see a lot more of him starting next week.
Yeah, for sure. You know, as both him and Ty Montgomery get healthy, probably going to be a little bit different distribution in the running back carries, I would imagine. You know, one thing that I also noticed in this game is that, again, Jordy Nelson having another quiet game, just 17 yards on 5 receptions. He's kind of been an afterthought in the offense ever since Hundley took over. But hopefully, you know, for your guys' sake, that now that the Lions season's done, I can say this without feeling, you know, bitter. But but if Rodgers does come back, I think that's going to give, you know, Jordy a shot in the arm. And next thing you know, I mean, I think the Packers will be firing all cylinders, especially if the defense plays like they did today.
We'll see. We've got to get past Cleveland. And boy, I was really hoping they'd get a win today because I do not want to be the team that gives up a win to them.
But get that obligatory win out of the way.
Yeah, as far as Jordy Nelson goes, you're right. It's going to be really interesting to see whether he comes back to life this season, even with Rodgers. He was kind of been a shadow of the receiver who led the NFL in touchdowns last season and was a once feared deep threat. He is not getting any separation from corners. He seems blanket covered every time they try to throw to him. He had a team high 5 catches, but gained only 17 yards. So that kind of tells you a little bit about how deep his targets are at this point. And we haven't really been able to see him make any plays after the catch either. Usually, you know, you Packer receivers, you tend to find they'll catch the ball and then make the first guy miss, and then they're off to the races. But yeah, that has definitely not been the case for him. And it'll be interesting to see if it's a symptom of, you know, having Brett Hundley at quarterback or more of a long-term issue with his ongoing decline.
Yeah, you know, and it's I'm glad that you pointed that out, Brian, because a lot of people like to point to the quarterback change and just assume or say that that's the reason that, you know, Nelson hasn't been playing that well. But I mean, when they played Detroit a few weeks back, you know, we held him to, you know, under 40 yards as well. And most of those plays, like you said, he was just not getting open. And that was the case here today against the Bucks. And, you know, speaking of the Bucks, that is, of course, my Lions' next opponent, Jameis Winston, back under the helm, under center, I should say. And he had a decent day, 270 yards, a couple touchdowns, and no interceptions. He definitely had the connection back with Cameron Brate. You know, they had one connection in the red zone for a score, and I believe the other one was a little bit further out. I want to say they were just kind of on the cusp of the red zone, but you know, Winston did turn the ball over, fumbled a couple times, I think, in this game, and for the most part, the Bucs defense just, they still look like they're really struggling. Only a couple of sacks. I didn't see anything, you know, to give any Buccaneers fans hope as far as maybe turning the season around and making a late push. I mean, I think they're pretty much done for the year. So nice to see Jameis Winston back and healthy, at least one of the young up and coming stars here of the league. So this game again goes into overtime, and Brian, your Packers prevail. The final score here, 26-20, with Green Bay taking this one, and they're now starting to make a push for that division, Brian. So this is going to really get interesting down the stretch, especially when they play my Lions here.
Yeah, I don't know if we can catch the division. I think Minnesota, it's their division to lose, but I don't care. If we can sneak into the playoffs with Rodgers, all things are possible.
Yeah, you never know, man. The Panthers, the Falcons, both losing today. So there is some hope, my friend. And we'll see how the season plays out. And looking forward to speaking with you here down the road for our next Superfan battle.
Sounds good. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, thanks again, Brian. Take care. Hello, once again, it is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions Superfan, here to host the recap for the Carolina Panthers at the New Orleans Saints. And with me is Chris, our New Orleans Saints super fan. Chris, thank you for stopping by, sir. And why don't you take us through the news and notes here on this 10-point victory with the Saints coming out ahead 31-21 today.
That's huge. This is the first time the Saints have swept the Panthers since 2011. The Panthers were a half game back in the playoff hunt. This couldn't be bigger. The Falcons lost today. The Panthers lost today. This puts the Saints now, you know, the NFC South is theirs. It's as long as they don't screw this up, they should be able to lock it up. And I think the biggest part about this is it kind of allows a slip up on Thursday against Atlanta. You know, it gives them, because they play them twice in the next four games. They can lose this one on Thursday and it not be a crushing blow because they came out today. So huge, huge victory for New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, I see from the, you know, when you see the score 21-31, you know, it doesn't seem like the game was that close. Every time I didn't get to see all of the game, but every time I was tuning in, it seemed like the Saints pretty much had this game well in hand. Was there any point in this game in which the game looked like it might be in jeopardy, or did they pretty much just handle business like it looked like from the occasional fan dropping in, such as myself?
I mean, it was fairly one-sided. There were some moments where it looked like Carolina might be able to get something going, but ultimately, I mean, it fell flat. The Saints pretty much held this from the beginning, and you know, a big part of that was, again, this running back duo of Kamara and Ingram kept Cam Newton off the field. They made big plays. And the defense played well. I mean, there was no Lattimore today. There was no Marcus Williams. But Ken Crawley came out, and that kid balled. Defense is looking good again. This could be a good team here going into the playoffs.
Yeah, that running duo of Kamara and Ingram has just been phenomenal all year, with absolutely no sign of slowing down. And it's almost comical to think now, Chris, that back when the season started that you guys had Adrian Peterson on the roster. It almost feels like last year at this point. But, you know, I mean, with having him being, you know, a quote unquote luxury, again, Kamara getting into the box twice, and Ingram had a hellacious 72-yard run that I did see. It was nice to see a big game from Michael Thomas. You know, from Drew Brees' standards, kind of a subpar game from based on his Hall of Fame track record here. But this has been the formula all year. They're pounding the rock, like you said, keeping the other team off the field, and that's always a good news when you're or a good game plan, I should say, when you're going up against Cam Newton. Another big game coming up here, like you mentioned, against Atlanta. What are kind of some final thoughts here leading into that game, Chris?
You know, the Saints have to get healthy and get healthy quick. Marshawn Lattimore and Marcus Williams they're needed for this this game on Thursday. And I think that's why they kind of kept them up this week, is to play it safe. And hopefully that's the same story with Teron Armstead, our starting left tackle. But, you know, it's hard to tell. Not knowing who's going to be playing, I don't want to make a prediction. And I'm just happy with the win today and looking forward to the rest of the season.
Well, there you have it. It's definitely going to be a fantastic race for the division, like you mentioned, with the Falcons coming up here a couple times leading up through the end of the regular season. And Chris, I appreciate you stopping by to go through all of the game notes with us today. And we will catch up with you soon, sir.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
All right. Take care, Chris. All right. It is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan. And with me, once again, is Don, our Baltimore Ravens super fan, to recap this Week 13 matchup between a couple of teams that were both 6-5 going in. We knew it wasn't going to end up that way, Don. You were you had the fortune to go to the game today, which saw your Ravens emerge victoriously. Go ahead and take us through your news and notes, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, first of all, good to talk to you again, Josh. It was a little bit more rowdy crowd than we've had the past couple of games. I thought it was a very pretty docile crowd compared to usual. Obviously, you know, going into halftime up 20-0, everybody was feeling really good about it. But then the Lions had a nice comeback going into the third and the fourth quarter. They were only down by 7 at one point. And, you know, obviously the big keynote for the Ravens is Jimmy Smith going down. I feel like it was a very much like a Richard Sherman type of thing where he knew he was on borrowed time. They were trying to, you know, get as much out of him as they could. But they were just waiting for it. You never leave for the Achilles to go, and unfortunately it did. And they've been rotating Marlon Humphrey in on our first-round pick and at corner, getting him some snaps as the season goes on, give Jimmy Smith some rest. But it was a huge difference. You could see once Jimmy Smith went down, Marlon Humphrey was just getting burned all day by the Lions receivers. It was a big difference. I mean, obviously they came out with a win, you know, nice big win, but you know, some concerns going forward in the secondary. But for the first time in a while, they actually have a lot of depth at the secondary. So we'll see what happens there. What was your take from the game, Josh?
Well, you know, it's ugly at first, as you know, super slow start there. The first couple drives, I thought Flacco was, you know, off target, and I really thought we were in for a snoozer. And had you told me that one of these teams would have won by 24 points, I probably would have thought it'd be like a 24-0 job, you know. But Lions had early dropsies. We had Amir Abdullah inactive for this game, and Rook Tion Green was in there. He was kind of a preseason darling, looked really good, you know, before the season started. And he was active for the first time, got his first career touchdown. I thought he ran pretty well on some of the limited touches that he got. I mean, it's pretty obvious that the Lions were trying to do this in an attempt to find anything that works on the ground, which it was somewhat successful. But, you know, we had another game where we just couldn't have the whole five starting offensive linemen, you know, together. But essentially, you know, I thought Stafford did a pretty good job getting the ball out quickly. They were trying to do this short passing game. You know, I thought we were going to set a record for punts, though. And, you know, I see a Lions-Ravens game going on in records for teams. But, you know, but hey, it pretty much worked out, you know, kind of like I thought. I figured they'd go to Danny Woodhead a little bit more. They did look at Ben Watson in the red zone, so he did get open for a touchdown. Matt Prater was kind of a surprise here in this game, missing that that definitely. Rare missed field goal early. Yeah, then the extra point, that was really you could tell that he was just off, and of course Justin Tucker was not. But it was, you know, they came close there. Baltimore certainly looked, they didn't look like the 32nd ranked offense. I thought that the Lions did okay, but they just looked terrible. I mean, this team can't come out of the locker room ready to play a game. They have to wait until they're down by 20 points. And you didn't see them really make up anything. You mentioned, you know, Smith going out for the season with the Achilles. And I mean, that was the only time the Lions even did anything. They finally had some success through the air. They got a little bit of momentum there with that first scoring drive, and they were able to get the three and out, but took a couple drives there for them to get down and score again. But again, the shanked extra point, just a bad game for my boy Prater. But like you said, they got within a touchdown. Alex Collins looked really, really good. He answered back. I figured they'd have their hands full with him. Excellent touchdown celebration, by the way, with the tug of war. What were your thoughts on that, Don?
I like the tug of war. I mean, a lot of the celebrations are getting a little bit ridiculous, a little bit out of hand. That wasn't a terrible one. I mean, when he had his second touchdown, I like his Irish dance. I think it's just nice and simple to do. Once the Lions got the momentum, I guess what surprised me the most is the reliance on, you know, a lot of the quick passing, a lot of the screen stuff. You know, knowing that, you know, they could burn Marlon Humphrey deep, or they can burn the secondary deep, and kind of shied away from that. But yeah, you know, I mean, besides Jimmy, you know, obviously the Jimmy Smith stuff, good stuff, especially on the ground with Collins. I mean, I think Collins now has 705 yards on the ground. I mean, he could be on base and actually hit 1,000 yards this year, which is amazing considering he was on our practice squad at the very beginning of the season.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm thrilled with what he has. It's amazing that Seattle got rid of him, and you know, Seattle can't run the ball worth a damn besides for Russell Wilson.
I was just going to say that, Don. I can't believe with the struggles that Seattle's had on the ground that they would just kind of give up this guy. You know, I mean, he was, a fifth-round pick, and they just kind of cast him off after a season. They must have had bigger expectations for Eddie Lacy, but back to our game here. that was kind of unintended Freudian slip there. But the Ravens again, you know, I knew this game was out of hand, and our season was done once you saw Stafford go down with looked like Sizzle stepped on his hand. I thought his hand was broken for sure. I mean, they say X-rays come back negative, but
apparently they said, like the X-rays were negative and everything, but from what I was reading, it was a pretty gnarly looking hand he had. So, I mean, like we talked about before, I like Stafford a lot, so hopefully nothing long-term for him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, either way, that's the end of the Lions season. They had to win today. Jake Rudock took over in relief, promptly threw a pick six to Eric Weddle, who, in my opinion, you know, should be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. He's one of the best safeties I've ever seen play. And the Ravens definitely woke up today, Don, and our season pretty much died. I couldn't believe, you know, I looked back at the box score that the Ravens scored 24 in the fourth quarter. But, then I realized, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And they just kind of came out. Established that run early. That deep passing game, I think, really led to them having a lot of success. They ended up winning by 24 points. Lions established nothing except that they probably won't be going to the postseason this year. So, unfortunately, bad news for our Lions fans. Hell of a game by the Ravens here, Don. And glad to hear you enjoyed yourself. And we should see you here again next week, my friend.
All right, this is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm here with Josh, our Lions superfan. Right now, we're going to be doing sort of our recap roundtable for the superfans who are attending games, doing things like that, because it's real hard to record a game in that situation. So first game on the list, though, let's go right to it, the Texans and Titans. Josh, you and I were both just talking about this one off the air. Why don't you start us off? What stood out to you?
Yeah, my kind of the thing that put this game away was a big 75-yard touchdown run by Derrick Henry, who continues to be just the thoroughbred out of these two horses in the backfield. The Titans, I'm not saying DeMarco Murray had a bad game today, but overall for the season, I mean, he's lacking a burst. He's just doesn't seem to be hitting the hole well. It's clear cut that Derrick Henry is the man and needs to be given a workload that reflects as much. Otherwise, you know, there wasn't a whole lot going on. Marcus Mariota didn't play that great of a game, just 15 for 23, 150 yards. He did throw for a touchdown to Delanie Walker. But other than that, there was just some, you know, some ineptitude on the offensive side here for most of this game. As far as what I saw, early in the game, I thought that the Texans missed a really good opportunity to jump out to a big lead with missing Tom Savage, missed Nuke Hopkins in the end zone for he's just Nuke caught it, of course, because he's like the best receiver on the sideline. But he caught it just maybe an inch or so out of bounds. And I thought right away that that missed opportunity was pretty huge.
Yeah, I like that you highlighted Marcus Mariota. You know, he had 150 yards, which is not a lot in today's NFL. Didn't throw any interceptions, so it's not like he was not a problem. And the plays he made with his legs were key, like that touchdown. But he has this trend lately that's not been super positive. He threw two interceptions last week, four the week before. So I guess each week is a little bit better on that front. But for a player that I am really, really high on, he and Jameis Winston, I think, will always be tied together because they came out at the same time. And I think as those third year guys, to me, I think they're clearly a step behind the second year quarterbacks, right? The Carson Wentzes of the world, the Jared Goffs of the world. Looking at things from more of a Texans perspective, Tom Savage is doing everything you can ask from him. I mean, he's throwing way more than any Texan quarterback should, let alone a Texan quarterback through non-Savage. He had 49 attempts in this game. That's way too many. But he had 365 yards. I mean, he was moving the ball, only had the one interception. DeAndre Hopkins, though, made some incredible catches, as he always does. I mean, he needs to be in that conversation, really, for best wide receiver in the league. Speaking of, I think, unappreciated greatness, though, I also want to highlight Delanie Walker. Had another touchdown in this game. I don't say he's like the perfect tight end, right? Because there's guys like Gronk who are just better, right? But, you know, he's just totally adequate, like in every aspect of the game, right? He blocks well, he catches well, he has a great feel for the end zone. This is a second consecutive game with a touchdown. I think every single team in the NFL would love to have Delanie Walker on their team. I know he's late in the career, but man, he's been a very, very good football player. His 12th season, geez.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Walker is one of those guys that when you mentioned that initial, you know, top class of tight end, and it seems like people always put him kind of in the tier below, which, yeah, that may be fitting, but I mean, the guy's as solid as they come. He's one of the toughest players in the league. I mean, he seems like he's always on the injury report, but yet he trots out there every single Sunday and pretty much, you know, is scoring a touchdown or making a big play. He converts so many third downs for them. And, you know, one thing that was clutch was, you know, he made a catch on the drive that led to his touchdown that kept the chains moving, which in this game, you know, I mentioned some offensive ineptitude, a lot of drives stalling.
I mean, he had a 13-yard reception on 4th-and-1. Like, that was a real important catch he made.
Yeah, and I mean, there was, you know, in general, these teams, you know, we figured they might struggle to score points, and while the final score was, you know, a difference of 11 points, of course the Titans took this one 24-13. A lot of missed kicks. Suckup missed one of his two field goals, and Fairbairn missed two of his four field goals. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his first name, but with that going on, I mean, you're talking about 9 points off the board. And, you know, there was just kind of a general struggle was kind of the theme to this game. You know, it was pretty close for the most part. And, you know, it was a pretty good game. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, up until the fourth quarter there, you know, when Henry pretty much iced it, it was just kind of a struggle of futility on offenses from both sides.
I think that's really, really well said. But with the win, Tennessee stays tied for first place in the AFC South, so that's going to be an interesting race to watch. Speaking of interesting to watch, there's car crashes, right? And there's the New York Giants, which is about the same thing on the NFL level. They took on the Giants took on the Raiders today in the first game in, I don't even know how long without Eli Manning at quarterback. Fell to the Oakland Raiders by a score of 24-17. So why don't you give us your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I thought right there you led in with the perfect statement. The first time in however long you can remember, they made a comment during the broadcast that this was actually the first week of games that we have ever had since 1997. So we're talking about 20 years of football here with no Manning as a starting quarterback. When you think about that, not only does it speak to the longevity and the availability of both Eli and his brother, but just kind of, there was a different feel watching this game. You know, the offense didn't necessarily struggle, I would say. You know, Geno Smith was fairly capable in this game. He finished 21-34 for 212 yards. He didn't throw any interceptions. One thing that I find that I kind of thought went under the radar was he's missing, you know, all these passing targets. Well, so was Oakland. Oakland was of course without Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. So there was just a general lack of weapons on display in this game. Evan Ingram actually showed out, in some games this year where Sterling Shepard's had issues with migraines and other injuries and hasn't taken the field. Ingram's basically not shown up at all. And in this game with Shepard back, Ingram really blew up. 7 catches for 99 yards, including a score, the only touchdown from Geno Smith. And on the other side of the ball, the Raiders' main receiver was Cordarrelle Patterson, going 4 of 97, who to me doesn't strike me as one of those prototypical wide receivers. He's absolutely not that. He's more of a return guy, first overall draft pick, or not overall, but a first-round draft pick. Just one of those guys that seems like he's kind of never really picked up the feel of the game, and he's more of kind of like a let's hand it off to him or just throw him a bubble screen type of guy. But he actually had a pretty decent game, and Derek Carr, who I thought really would have took advantage of this this beat up Giants defense, it didn't really do that. He almost got to 300 yards, but for the most part the Raiders, it's December, Justin, and it's time to take the training wheels off of Marshawn Lynch. This is a guy that came out of retirement to run the ball for you, and he got a huge workload last week. Not necessarily the same size workload this week, but he did go over 100 yards on 17 carries, including a big 51-yarder in the first quarter to start the scoring. So for the most part, it was kind of what we thought we were going to see, you know, just kind of a general lack of offensive weapons and just kind of some other backups getting it done.
Yeah. And, I'm not going to let this go by without bringing up beast mode. And it was so good to see Marshawn Lynch on that run. I mean, like he looked pretty fast. It also looked like at the end he got kind of tired, so maybe being an old man is catching up to him a little bit. But yeah, like you said, 17 carries, 101 yards, touchdown. Oh man, keep doing you, Marshawn. Man, just keep doing you. You give me somewhat of a rooting interest in Oakland just to see you do well. But yeah, I mean, so here's the thing that baffles me about this game, though. Geno Smith was the starting quarterback because they're doing this whole, oh, yeah, we have these young guys. We want to see what we have. We got a plan for the future. But the other kid they have for quarterback, I forget his name, is inactive, and they have Eli as the number two quarterback in this game. So that means the only quarterbacks you can possibly see and see what you have in are Geno Smith, who's been in the league for a bunch of years now, and you know what you have in him, and Eli Manning, who, when he first was starting for you, Jerry Rice was still in the NFL. That's how long he's been your quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, playing for the Raiders at that. So, but no, I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. Not a whole lot more to say about this game, but yeah, I completely agree. I also thought it was odd that Davis Webb was inactive. You know, I mean, if you are going to come out and make a move like this, I know they said that it gives them the best chance to win, but honestly, you know, if they were giving up on the season, I feel like they should have just kept Eli in there. Let him leave with his dignity. I know it's kind of getting off on a tangent aside from the game, but really, I think Geno Smith kind of gave him a little bit better chance to win with the way that Eli has played this year. But I do think we'll get a dose of Davis Webb here later on in the season, whether it's around Christmas time or whenever. I'm sure the Giants will probably roll him out at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, so the last game, our little review roundup, Rams versus Cardinals. I'm sure you know I got opinions on this one. Unfortunately, the Cardinals are terrible, and as a result, are not able to beat the Rams, which is just that I've only ever asked them for one thing, and that's to beat the Rams this year, and they couldn't do it for me. But honestly, it was a fairly entertaining game, and it was fairly close throughout. And, you know, obviously, as, you know, the Seahawks fan, I was pretty invested in this game. I was following it pretty closely throughout. The final score, 32-16, that the Rams won by, again, I think is a little bit misleading. So the Rams immediately go up by 16 in the first quarter. Arizona puts up 13, and Rams put up another three. So, like, at halftime, it's a one-score game. And I'm fine with that, right? One-score game, division game, playing pretty well. And then you start to see sort of the difference between the Cardinals we saw 2-3 years ago and the Cardinals we have today, right? They start taking some, not even deep shots, like moderate shots, can't connect. Blaine Gabbert's in at quarterbacks, which is its own problem. But even still, you're not able to get anything going. Meanwhile, pretty much every time the Rams have the ball, they're moving. Like they're moving effectively. And so as a result, you know, once the second half starts, Rams get the only score in the third quarter, which is a touchdown. They get a couple of field goals in the fourth quarter. Basically, they're just moving up and down and eating up the clock. Meanwhile, every attempt to move the ball on the part of Blaine Gabbert, it, like, sucks. I mean, he had two interceptions in the day. You know, the only bright spot they had was Larry Fitzgerald, which is, you know, we've been saying that for, I feel like, 15 years now. You know, even on defense, right? They had a couple of opportunities to get after Jared Goff, and they never really paid it off. They only had one sack the entire day. That is terrible. Meanwhile, poor Blaine Gabbert was sacked six times, right? So I don't know. I mean, what do I expect? The Rams are obviously much, much better than the Arizona Cardinals. Jared Goff is a way better quarterback than Blaine Gabbert. But
Boy,
I was disappointed.
Well, it's you know, hey, the thing is, when you count on a team led by Blaine Gabbert with no Adrian Peterson, by the way, it was Kerwin Williams on the ground for the Cardinals, and you probably noticed this during the game. He looked fantastic, and I thought that they should have probably tried to get him the ball a little more, whether it's on, you know, a screen pass or something. I mean, that was his primary duty. You know, in a couple years leading up to this season, was he was kind of like a receiving threat out of the backfield, just like Andre Ellington. And I know Bruce Arians likes Kerwin Williams, but I really thought we'd see more DJ Foster today. But Williams looked great, and I thought that when they got away from giving the ball to Kerwin Williams, that was really when they lost the game. Chandler Jones supplied their only sack. You mentioned on the other side, they sacked Gabbert six times, and that was pretty much when the game, you know, was still in hand. You know, Ogletree had a pick six on Gabbert, and that's kind of when, you know, you thought, oh boy, here comes the blowout. But no, you know, Arizona come back with two touchdowns. I think both teams missed the extra point, I believe, or one was blocked, perhaps. But yeah, I mean, overall, a weird score, but pretty much the result that I think a lot of people were thinking about.
Yeah, and I mean, and on the Rams side, I mean, Jared Goff continues to play well. He played well today against a team that is not good. Todd Gurley, man, his career has been the biggest roller coaster, right? As a rookie, he looked incredible. His sophomore season, everybody forgot he existed. This year, he's phenomenal again. I mean, he led the team in both receiving and rushing with 74 yards on the ground, 84 through the air, and like a lot of touches. I mean, he had like 25 total touches, only missed one of his targets. That was pretty much their MO. I mean, like their whole game plan seemed to largely be to either, take some shots down the field, hand it to Todd Gurley, or if you're going to go short, you just throw it to him on a little screen pass and let him do all the work, which he did an awesome job of. So,
yeah, shout out absolutely.
To Todd Gurley. He played well.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of this where you see Gurley showing up as, you know, the leading receiver, I know this isn't the first time this has happened this year, but some of this has to do with Sean McVay just simplifying things for Goff. You know, I can't imagine the breath of fresh air that must be going from a total idiot egomaniac like Jeff Fisher as your coach right. to a guy that's, you know, not that much older than you and Sean McVay, who just schemes things supremely easy for him. He gives him just, you know, two reads and then a dump down to Gurley. So, you know, if he's looking at the, you know, one side of the field and, you know, his X or Y is an open or whoever's in the slot or his tight end, whatever the first and second read is, he's just going to dump it off to Gurley. And I mean, that's proven to be a pretty solid and pretty safe
strategy.
Yeah, and I mean, you saw things before the Ogletree pick six. The you probably saw they lined up Everett as a tight end, and that's something that you see your Seahawks do with Jimmy Graham on occasion. They'll line him up out wide, and you know, he's a guy that is looking for matchups to exploit. And it's no surprise that the Rams move on to 9-3 in this one. I thought a complete game on both sides of the ball for the Rams.
I think that's really, really well said. Cardinals. That's all I wanted was one thing. You couldn't do it. All right. So that's gonna do it for our little review roundup. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
It's starting to get a little interesting, man. These AFC and NFC playoff races are really starting to kind of cluster up, and there's going to have to be some separation pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of exciting football happening in the very last 2 weeks of the season. Not that many players being rested for sure. All right, Josh. Well, hey, thank you. I will catch you later.
My pleasure, Justin. Take care.
All right, that's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts can be located. You know, also share us, like us on Facebook. We're on Twitter as well, at NFU Podcast. Send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Also find us online, nextfanup.wordpress.com. Thank you to all the super fans for their contributions. And, of course, thank you to our sponsor, Harry's Razor. Harry's, we love you, man. Keep on trucking. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.